This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Place to Be Nation WWE pay-per-view reaction show series. I'm your host, Chris Zellner, joined as always by my co-host, the Oracle of WWE, Devin Hales. And Devin, we're going to talk about Fastlane, which it doesn't seem like it's been but maybe 2 weeks since we last did one of these shows for Elimination Chamber. This time period went by really quick.
Yes, it did. 3 weeks, I think, is what it was exactly. And
yeah, 20 weeks.
And to be honest, the build wasn't all that compelling leading up to this show. A lot of things kind of got messy in terms of the writing and the storytelling. I think there's reasons for that. Backstage specifically, as some news and things have come out
turnover
since then. Yeah. I think that's fair to say. Whether, you know, and that's not really a defense of the messiness. It's just sort of, in my opinion, sort of a reaction, a natural reaction of that's, you know, of things being switched around in the creative team. And so we...
Which is very interesting that they're doing that this late into the main.
Yes, it is. Very interesting.
You know, and what we're talking about, people that don't know, maybe living under a rock, Bruce Pritchard and Jeff Jarrett have become major forces in creative now. And, yeah, I mean, there's also been some hirings in the agents like Sanjay Dutt, Abyss, Shane Helms. So there's a lot of new guys involved in backstage.
It's also I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's also worth noting that Dana Warrior has been given a shot to be at least do some sort of consulting, or at least the rumors are saying a practice run of some sorts to be on the creative team. And there was a new woman that is on the creative team. I can't remember what her name is.
Well, she's got I think her job has been enhanced.
Right, yes. She's been promoted, really, as almost like the lead writer of the women's division.
Well, and also, I want to say for maybe the exact full lead writer, but one of the top writers from SmackDown.
Yes, that's right. Yep. So, Betsy, I think, is her first name.
Betsy. I can't remember her last name, but yeah, I mean, there's a big upheaval going on right now backstage, so that's been part of the reason why there may be a little clunkiness. But one thing I guess we could say about tonight was we really started to get some full directions given, and a lot of story advancement was made on this show, which on the last week before Mania. If you're setting up Mania, that's where you need to go more often than not. So we'll talk about Fastlane now. We had the kickoff show, which they announced that we were going to have two matches. Rey Mysterio against Andrade Cien Almas, or Andrade now. But they got moved into the main show and made the US heavyweight title match between Samoa Joe and Truth was made into a four-way. Due to a vignette backstage involving Zelina Vega and Carmella, where Samoa Joe and eventually Samoa Joe said, "I'll wrestle all of them." So there's your four-way match. So, and one thing I want to mention about this kickoff show as well, was one of the most, I'm trying to think of the exact words here. It was probably the best use of a kickoff show we've had in a long time because it was advancing stuff for the main show. It was advancing storylines that we've talked about. It actually seemed like it had a purpose this time. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I definitely think so. I think a good word would be effective. Would be a good word to use. Yeah. Because, you know, a lot of times the pre-shows are just, you know, fodder to kill time, you know.
Talking heads. So you have to, silly things.
You know, place where, you know, Pat McAfee and Sam Roberts can say stupid shit. and it, you know, they really used their time wisely tonight. And
it seemed like there was a direction.
Yes, yes, it really helped. Really helped a lot.
And they were moving people out of the panel. Beth Phoenix was on for a while. The Christian came in, and I thought he did great. Otunga went out for, you know, they brought AJ Styles in, and then Sam Roberts is kind of doing, I wouldn't say he's doing like a heel gimmick, but he's doing like a wrestling journalist gimmick where he's, you know, doing all this like inside stuff, but in a heelish type of way. He's trying to be an antagonist. Basically, he's doing my co-host on Twitter, she's David Biggs's fan. And Biggs was had a pass deal with Coach, so this was the closest thing we're gonna get to Biggs versus Coach in a real life situation with Sam and Coach. So one of these days something may go down on one of these kickoff shows. But yeah, I mean, you had that the Carmella thing, you had the stuff with Mandy and Sonya, which I thought was interesting. EC3,
I have a theory on that, and we'll get to that here when we get to the match, but.
Well, immediately you could tell that this was going to play into something later on the show. And that's what these things are supposed to do. Because Sonya chumped off EC3, but you know this is the beginning of something. You can see, okay, this wasn't just something that random deal, some one-off. This is the beginning of something. And with AJ joined the panel, and they talked about that, and he talked about, you know, he was going to do a Randy Orton when the time was right. And you know, that's something that was in your mind when the show went along. And then we had, you know, interviews with Kevin Owens, which New Day showed up in a kind of a serious manner. And Owens wished, you know, Kofi the best, wish he was in the match, blah, blah, blah. And then they did a deal where Kofi was told that the McMahons was waiting on him. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on before even the kickoff match. So that's very refreshing. Very refreshing. Well, let's get to that match. The rest of New Day, Big E and Xavier, went up against Shinsuke Nakamura and Rusev. And this was a very, very good match. These teams worked well together. Lots of fun action. Also during the match, we had a little inset promo with The Miz and Miz Dad, his pops, talking about their match with Shane. And Miz told that told his daddy he's going to get in the front row and be ready for the match because that was going to lead off the pay-per-view. So they're advancing that during this, but yeah, I thought that the stretch run for this match was really good, good near falls, and I mean, I kind of expected New Day to win, but they did give you that doubt that they may lose. So because Nakamura and Rusev are a fairly new team, but New Day ended up coming out in the win with after the up down down, and yeah, we move on to other things that's going to happen later on the show. So what's your thoughts about the match?
Yeah, this was a very good match. I actually picked Rusev and Nakamura to win, and because I thought they needed a big win on a big show. You know, regardless, I don't think that they're hurt or anything by losing this match. I was just expecting them to get kind of a big win.
Well, especially later on, what happens, yes.
This was a very good match. Big E and Xavier have always been my favorite combo as a tag team in the New Day. So I was excited to see that. And, you know, they killed it. I wasn't expecting the match to be as good as it was, actually. And it was really, really good. Like you said, the stretch run was really good. I think Nakamura has actually been a little bit more motivated the last few months. Even though he's still missing a lot of TV time. He seems more motivated in what he's doing, which is nice to see. I think he and Rusev have really good chemistry as a tag team. And a lot of the makeshift tag teams they've put together the last few months have actually worked. This match was really good, and it really set the show off nicely because I wasn't expecting, you know, I was expecting this match to be good, but this match really over delivered. It was a nice surprise. I was really satisfied with this match. It was really good.
Yeah, and like I said, there's gonna be more coming up, so we'll talk about these guys as we move along with the show. All right, so now we pivot to the main show and begin with the SmackDown Tag Titles match, where the Usos defend against The Miz and Shane McMahon, and we've talked about this whole deal on multiple shows recently, Miz and Shane. And they're in Cleveland, so Miz's hometown, the first time he's actually been a true babyface in Cleveland. And the crowd was eating it up. They were finally able to really cheer for the Miz. Miz had a Cleveland Browns, Cleveland is Awesome shirt. I mean, it was really a good moment for him, for sure. The match was way better than their last match at Elimination Chamber. Mainly because the Miz worked the bulk of the match, and Miz was on fire. He was motivated. He was doing stuff. Like, he did a crossbody off the top to the floor. When's the last time you seen Miz do something like that? And then the finish where he did the frog splash, for God's sakes. I mean, Miz was humping it. And Shane did Shane things. And the spot in the match was the standoff late in the match where Shane's on one side of the ring wanting to do his Van Terminator. And Jimmy Uso climbed up top. And he was going to do the big splash off the top. Well, they both looked at each other and was like, okay, are you going to do this? Are you going to do this? And then they both jumped.
Insane.
And in that moment, Shane in the air hit his drop kick on Jimmy Uso, and it looked like a complete car crash. And both guys hit the mat very hard, especially Shane. He looked like he was hurting because, you know, Shane's pushing 50. I mean, he's not a young guy. And, hitting the Van Terminator is one thing, but to get that extension and then have to hit really quick and close it up, oh, man. So, now we're in the finish. Miz's dad told Miz to climb up top. That's when he went for the frog splash, and Jay got the knees up and rolled up Miz for the win. So, a great finish where Miz's dad cost his son the match. But, you know, which... You were thinking maybe something else would happen that way, the cost of the match. But Miz's dad cost them the match. So then the Usos duck out and, get out of the way. And then Shane and Miz, they hug it out. It's like, okay, it is what it is. They go up there to Miz's dad and hug him, high-five him. And then Shane attacked Miz from behind. And then that place just went nuclear. He beat the dog shit. He was kicking Miz very hard in the face, and he was giving the Shane punches, which looked like they weren't feeling any good either. And Shane's just tearing him up, and then he gets in Miz Dad's face and pie faces him, throws him back on the chair, and then Shane locks on this triangle that he did, but it was very funky in the way he did it, and we did it right in front of Miz Dad. Miz passes out in front of him, and very heated angle, and tremendous, and it was perfect they did this in Cleveland. You couldn't have picked a better place to do it. This would not have worked as well any other place than Cleveland. So you had perfect timing of everything here. City, angle, and participants involved. You don't get much better here. So I love the turn, and it was not what I was expecting. I was expecting Shane was going to be the one to turn on Miz, but I wasn't expecting it to be that way. So I was pleasantly surprised. So talk to me about this. I know you love it.
Yeah, this was fantastic. This was outstanding. This reminds me of, what this was a lot like, Chris? This is like one of those old Memphis feuds where, two guys, it was very Memphis, very Memphis-like, where kind of reminds you of like when Lawler and Eddie Gilbert would get together, or Lawler and Dundee would get together.
Well, anything involving families,
right, exactly. Yeah. They'd team up and things would be going well, and then one of them would inevitably turn on the other for one reason or another. Yeah, this was an excellent angle, excellent match. They've built this up tremendously over the last several months since the World Cup show. This has been really, really, really well done. Match itself was great, like legitimately great. last month's show was not too good at times. I enjoyed Shane doing his greatest hit stuff, but, you know, I mean, it was just kind of there, whatever. This was...
It was refreshing. It was refreshing, wasn't it, that Shane didn't do a dive to the table? Oh, yes.
You know, yeah, absolutely. Shane, did some face and peril work, and he's, did a solid job of that. But Miz, he's doing springboards and fancy sunset flips and dives to the... I mean, and I really like that because it fits the story. You know, Shane's all confident. Rather, Miz is all confident now. You know, he's got his dad's approval, and he's trying more things now. And if you notice in the match, there were a few moments. I don't know if it was just me creating something out of thin air or what, but I feel like it could be potentially something that's brought up later. The Miz seemed like he was refusing to tag when he had a chance to make the hot tag to Shane. There were a few moments.
There was a narrative there, and you could tell that Miz wanted to handle this himself.
Right. And I think that it also works in the fact that Miz, he lost that match at the Elimination Chamber. He feels responsible.
Exactly.
But he also has that confidence because Shane has brought that confidence back into him and all this. I think it's really, really well, really well done layered storytelling.
And his dad, I mean, he's trying to please his dad.
Yes. Yep.
Is in a front row.
Yep. And that played into the finish perfectly. The post-match is one of the all-time great WWE post-matches, I think. I know it's early, and that might be recency bias, but it was really well executed. Some people were critical of George Mizanin's lack of charisma. He's not the most charismatic guy there is. But,
No, he's not.
And I can get that to a degree, but it's hard to put any person who's not a wrestler or a performer to do something like that well. I mean, that's difficult. And I thought he did well enough. I actually believed his anger and at Shane. I actually believed it.
Well, the thing is where he's supposed to be. Right.
I mean,
like he is.
Right. You know. I mean.
You don't want some ham out there. No. That's overacting. Yeah,
you don't want to. You don't want, well, I mean, to be fair, he was a wrestler, but you don't want Keith Hart or whoever the fuck Hart brother it was. He used to get himself way too involved.
Yeah.
I don't think it was Keith. Maybe it was somebody else, but it was one of them that people always make jokes about. But anyways.
Well, Keith was up there. Smith Hart was crazy. So all those Harts are nuts, yes.
But I thought of course, Shane pie-faced George Mizanin back into his seat, and I thought, Miz's dad did a pretty good job of like wanting to come over the railing, but being kind of afraid of Shane, and like, I thought it was really well done. This was an excellent angle, and I'm really excited for the build and the match at WrestleMania. I think Miz is gonna get a good, some good reactions, at babyface in other towns. But like you said, this was the perfect place to do the Shane heel turn. And it worked perfectly. I mean, the heat was through the roof for this. This felt like an 80s Memphis or NWA turn. I mean, the heat was insane, especially when he ripped off the brown shirt and threw it. That was a no-no. But that was awesome. Yeah, this is a feud that I'm really looking forward to seeing unfold. Going into Mania, this was great stuff.
And Shane as a heel is fresh. He has been a heel in
years. Yes, and by the way, let me point this
many
out.
Years
point this out. And maybe we can wait till later, and I can just mention it now. We can talk about it later if you want. But with the Shane heel turn, I want you to think about this, and it's something I thought about.
Okay.
Now, Vince and Shane appear to be the heels of the McMahon family, the older generation. And Triple H and Stephanie appear to be the baby faces of the McMahon generation. Now, I'm not saying that there's going to be some big, long feud or anything like that, but I think that that's an interesting story that's unfolded. I think Stephanie's been kind of a tweener in some ways, but particularly in the Becky storyline.
Well, she's Stephanie.
Right, right. she can't really be full baby face, but... I just think that's an interesting thing to point out. And I absolutely think it's on purpose, for sure. I just think it's an interesting thing to look at it like the old guard and new guard of the McMahon family. The older ones are the heels and the younger ones are the baby faces. I just think that that's...
Oh, I could see some... I mean, I always thought there was going to do an angle where Shane... It's going to be Shane and Triple H going head-to-head, you know, playing off real-life issues over, you know, the company, because Shane, you know, leaving the company and basically giving it up his birthright, and then Paul sweeping on in.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, oh, yeah, that's something that's going to be in play down the road, for sure. Because they're all supposed to be together, you know, in this McMahon family storyline. You know it's going somewhere.
Right.
So, yeah, this is just another way of getting there. So, it's going to be definitely interesting. I agree. All right, so that was great stuff. All right, there we go. McIntyre, Corbin, and Lashley doing a Shield promo. Then the first of Elias in the ring. And I thought this was a great way of using Elias. They had Elias come out multiple times throughout the show, basically giving you a summation of the main angles, but in song, where he would rip the city of Cleveland every time. And he did it three times. And we'll talk about the last one later, because it led to something. But I really enjoyed this use of Elias. I mean, if you're not gonna have him wrestle, at least have him on the show and do this, because he's gonna be good no matter what he does. So use him use him and put him out there. You know, I enjoyed this.
Yeah, this was
getting the cheap heat.
This was great stuff. I don't know if I'm reading into this too much or anything, but from the few times I've listened to Bruce's podcast, if he's really tapped into the creative as much as people like Mike Johnson and others say, this feels like a Bruce Pritchard idea, because I know he always talks about how he would produce, you know, certain, you know, segments, you know, that, you know, kind of comedy segments and stuff like this. You know, he was always a guy who was involved with the, you know, character producing segments and stuff like that. I'd be curious if this was, I know, you know, we've all been making jokes, hashtag Bruce, but I'm curious to see how much his fingers were on this segment.
Well, I'm sure, I mean, he's definitely involved.
Yes.
You know, him and Jeff are definitely involved. Yes. How much they are involved, I don't know, because Dave Kapoor is still the boss.
Right, right.
Of creative. For people who don't know who Dave Kapoor is, the former Ranjan Singh. So he's pretty much the head of the creative. And everything goes around him. But I'm sure, yeah, there's a lot of input coming out. And, you know, the thing was, Elias could never get through with a song. He ended up doing three songs in this one show.
But you know what it served? It also served as downtime for the crowd, too, at the same time.
Yeah, which and is you smart. Get the crowd hot too.
I'd rather them, you know, you do stuff like that rather than have a match be a downtime. You know what I mean? Like, that's also a positive for these alliance for these segments is that it served as good downtime as well.
Yeah. All right. Next, we get SmackDown Women's Title match: Asuka defending against Mandy Rose. Sonya Deville, of course, coming down the ringside with Mandy. Good back and forth match. You know, if you saw their TV match, a lot of the same type of stuff. But Sonya was trying to look for a foreign object to use multiple times. And at one point, she pulled out a kendo stick. And in doing that, though, she left the ring skirt on the apron up. And Asuka threw Mandy into the ropes, and Mandy slipped on the ring skirt. And Asuka then kicked her right in the face, and Asuka got the win. Mandy was kind of upset at this. Sonya was apologizing, blah, blah, blah. And Mandy walked off on Sonya. So here we go. Here we go. So now we had the EC3 thing, and now we had this. It's going to be interesting to see where this falls. And I'll tell you this, if it goes the way I think it's going, Sonya Deville may be in for some interesting times in her upcoming career, because you already know that they're going to have Mandy on that top level. So it's going to be interesting for Sonya. But here's the thing I want to get your opinion on. Do you think that they would do something that they definitely would have done years ago here and tried to turn this into some type of lesbian storyline with Sonya being, you know, really gay in real life? Do you think that they'll go in that direction? You think that they have learned from doing that in the past?
That's my theory. I think they're going to go there.
Okay.
I think that's tough for them. I think they have to be very careful. And obviously sensitive to that,
especially when one of the talent is openly gay.
Yes, absolutely.
You know,
I'm interested to see if they do that and if they can pull it off. I'd be more than welcome and open to an angle like that. It's obviously something that's riding the line. Because you don't want to.
Well, it depends on how you pull it off.
Right.
You know?
It's hard.
Now, the one thing is those two are really tight in real life. Really best friends.
Yes.
So
I think
that's a different factor that goes into it as well.
Yes. That's the impression I get from it. I originally thought, you know, I think I was like, are they going to do a Trish Mickey storyline?
Yeah. See, that's where I was thinking, like, oh, are they going to try something like that?
Trish Mickey worked, but it wasn't this. If they do Trish Mickey with this, that would be bad, I think. Because,
well, see, the difference is, yeah, the difference there with Trish and Mickey was like a stalker.
Right.
Sonya's like, I think the way they would go is
they would
like,
have to turn Sonya babyface.
She's just in love with Mandy.
Right.
Yeah.
They would have to turn Sonya babyface.
Well,
I really think you, I mean, they can, but it's
going to be interesting to see how they would do that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, she would have to come off as like a scorn.
Right.
And, I mean, that could be the way they could do it. If EC3 acts like a real asshole, and then, you know, Mandy is an asshole too, then yeah.
Right.
It'll work.
Right. But I do feel like that's where it's going, specifically because of the EC3 angle, more than anything. That segment sort of, like, okay, you know.
The way Sonya handled herself in that definitely came off that way.
Yes. As far as the match goes, I thought it was good. I actually didn't think it was as good as a TV match from a few weeks ago. I agree. There was a few sloppy moments in there. There was a spot where Mandy, who usually executes her strength spots and stuff like that pretty well, I guess she wasn't confident enough she would be able to deadlift Asuka.
Well, we had that thing last week at the house show that may still be on her mind.
Yep, you're right. And, you know, and that's a fair point and a fair defense and good for her. And I think that's actually smart on her now that, because I actually forgot about that. And she may have thought, you know.
For those who don't know, she kind of dropped. It wasn't really her fault. Asuka landed on her head. And they thought, you know, and there was a little scare there, but everything turned out all
it
right.
It was a miscommunication. I actually think it was Asuka's fault on the spot because Asuka tucked her head.
Yeah, I mean,
we don't know. The spot was called, it seemed like, and it looked like Asuka maybe thought there was a victory roll. And then, but, you know, I mean, there's a video out there. I mean,
yeah.
And, you know, Asuka's fine, but.
Yeah, of course. You know, it worked out.
That spot seemed like it was Mandy going, oh no. I'm just gonna just let this go, and now that you mention that, that might have been a good idea. But yeah, you know, the match was fine. I liked the finish; it was clever. I like when they do innovative finishes in wrestling. I'm always a mark for that, so I enjoyed that. And
yeah, you don't see a lot of ring apron skirts finishes. Yeah,
no, you don't. This is. Mandy has been someone in the rumor mill who has been talked about as being someone who's going to be pushed, and that has become true in a lot of ways with the Naomi program and now this title match during Mania season. So, and it looks like she's going to have more TV time with this thing with Sonya. So it'll be interesting to see how this unfolds. And I really do
think... EC3 has a purpose now.
Yes, he does. And I'm interested to see if... they go the lesbian angle route. That's it's a scary, dangerous road. But
or, I mean, the one thing they could do is just keep it being the best friend type
right,
of deal. But
right.
But you like you get if you know. You kind of get the subtext.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
That might be more what it is, which I think would probably be better. You know, I think if it was 2003, it'd be, oh, she's gay, blah, 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 you know, WWE typical.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is probably more in line with it, you know, like you said, is they're clearly best friends in real life, and I think that they might play with that. And the people who were in on, you know, Sonya's sexuality, or you know, there's obviously going to be some undertones there that are going to be played with. So,
yeah,
interesting development.
So, yeah, and we'll see. Definitely, we'll see. All right. Next up, we have Big E and Xavier with Kofi, who's still standing outside the office an hour after he was called there. And Big E knocks on the door and just walks right on in. And Vince is like, "I've been waiting on you." Where you been? And then, and Vince, what? And only Vince's way. And they insisted that he be at the match, and Vince agreed and said he's gonna make it a triple threat match. But Big E and Xavier are banned from ringside. Fans broke onto a huge Kofi chant, the first of many. So Kofi goes to the ring, and Greg, the announcer, was about to announce. The participants got messaged up before that. He announced that the WWE title match would be later on tonight, and Kofi would be facing the Bar in a handicap match instead. So there is a triple threat match, but it's a handicap match with the Bar against Kofi. And here comes Sheamus and Cesaro, and they beat the shit out of Kofi for a while. Kofi has some offense in the match, and the fans are into it. But the fans kind of got tired of the story, and it got to a way where may not have worked out the way they were hoping it would have reaction-wise, because it was this is boring chant, and it was interesting to watch, because they were thinking, I'm sure they were hoping that the fans were going to be really sympathetic towards Kofi. They were kind of turning on it in another direction. And then the New Day eventually comes out, and then comes Rusev Nakamura attacking them. So now we have them taken care of, and then double white noise on Kingston after a bro kick and all the stuff that happened there. Kofi gets pinned 1-2-3. As you know, yeah, it took Kofi out for the rest of the show, but the story here is what's more important than anything else. You can throw away everything as far as the match goes. It's all about advancing where they're going storyline wise. And they made Kofi even bigger tonight, because the fans were just chanting hard for Kofi during the title match, which we'll talk about later on the show. And they made Kofi seem like a huge deal here. So, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I kind of want to go back and watch the backstage segment with Vince, because he said the WWE title match would be a triple threat, but he never said Kofi would be in it.
He never said Kofi by name.
Right.
He just said a triple threat, yes.
And I think that was a clever, you know, detail there that I didn't catch on to that.
Well, I thought he was talking about Kofi.
Right, right, I did
too. You know, even though he didn't mention him by name, I'm just thinking, I thought the story was going to go this way. They did this so Kofi get the shit kicked out of him. And then he kind of had to come back and wrestle again.
Right.
You know, but he's fucked up. So Vince could say, well, I put him out there. I gave him his chance. He failed.
Right.
See, I thought that's the way it was going to go. Of course, we'll talk about what happened later on. So they threw a curveball in this one. But go ahead.
Yeah. So I think that was kind of an interesting way to do that. You know, the handicap match, that's, you know, I mean, it wasn't really a match. You know, I mean, it was technically, but I mean, there's no rating or anything, you know. I mean, it was all angle. But it was well worked.
You got Sheamus and Cesaro on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. you know, the New Day coming out, you know, for the save, even though they were barred from ringside, I really like, because you know, a year ago, our babyface's buddies probably wouldn't come out and help him. You know, we're missing two, you know, I've watched plenty of old WCW Saturday Nights and Worldwides where Sting is getting beat up and three or four babyfaces come out to help, you know.
Especially back in the old days.
I want to see that. You know, I get tired of the babyfaces just getting beat down every single time and nobody helping them.
John Cena, I mean, that's the story of John Cena's career, basically.
I mean, nobody ever helped the guy. And it got really annoying.
Only Crime Time.
Yeah.
Basically.
There you go. That just got frustrating, and I was really happy to see that. But, yeah, you know, I think there is something to the idea that the fans were upset and bored, whatever. But this is... this is very meta, this storyline is. And when, now I don't think that they were probably too thrilled with a boring chant. That was definitely something that probably cut them off guard. But I think when New Day came out, I think things got sort of reset back to where they wanted it to. And the heat was definitely there for the beatdown for sure.
Yes.
You know, yes. I think New Day coming out and helping definitely helped that and speeded things up and sort of, you know, reset the course. But this is a meta angle, so the boos and the Kofi chants during the title match, which we'll get to, are all done and designed for that. Because I'm pretty positive we're going to get Brian and Kofi for the WWE title in a singles match at WrestleMania. So,
yeah, that's where they should go. I don't know. I don't know. I just think something's going to happen. We'll talk about that when we get to the title match. All right, but still very effective in advancing what they were doing. All right, Charlie Caruso interviewed Sasha and Bayley. Nothing really noticed there. Elias had another one of his deals where he mocked Kofi and The Miz. Talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers, which of course I got the booze.
Let me interrupt you real quick. Yeah. I will say this about the Bayley promo. I really liked when she mentioned Kofi. Because when other wrestlers who aren't involved in other storylines have a reaction to storylines, it gives weight to the angle that just occurred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it
and now and then they're on different shows.
Right, exactly. It gives importance to what just happened, and I really like that. That was I don't know if that was on purpose or if that was just off the cuff by Bayley. Either way, great job, because that kind of stuff needs to happen more in WWE.
Absolutely. Kayla Braxton tried to interview Shane in the McMahon family office. He just gave her this look and walked off. So yeah, he's really healing it up now. And then we get a three-way for the Raw tag titles with the Revival defending against Ricochet, Aleister Black, and Chad Gable and Bobby Roode. I thought this match was good. There were spots where it was kind of clunky in ways, but I thought overall it was good for what it was. Everybody worked hard. And... you know, there was a lot of, you know, good looking stuff. And Ricochet looked great in this match, hitting his spots. Black looked great as well. And the story of the match, that was Revival got the win. And kind of a surprise, because I was kind of thinking they were going to end up losing here. I thought they were going to lose the titles without even losing a match. I thought that's the way we were going to go here, where one of Gable and Roode got beat by one of Ricochet and Aleister Black. So I thought they were going to do that type of finish. But I was surprised. They hit the Shatter Machine on Gable and got the win. So clean for the Revival, and I'm guessing Ricochet and Aleister Black will get a another shot at the title again, but we'll see. So, what are your thoughts on this and the Raw tag team situation?
Yeah, this match was great. I actually liked it more than you did. I don't think it was anywhere near the best match of the show, or anything like that, but I thought it was a really good match. You know, there were definitely a few, you know, so-so moments, but I really thought that they did really well. I will say this. I think that they could have done even more and put in even more into the match. Yes. In some ways, it felt a little bit tame, right? I mean,
yes, I agree.
And I feel like you probably felt that way, and even I did. But, I was fine with it. I sometimes you don't have to go all out. And
no.
I think they did a really good job. I think, the guys on the floor did a really good job of saving Ricochet and Scott Dawson's life.
Oh my God! Yes,
on the Rana, yeah, Ricochet to the floor.
did a Rana from the top rope to the floor, and Ricochet basically almost paralyzed himself, hitting his neck on the apron down. but it was fine.
This was a really good match, and I think the right team won, and I liked that they did the post match brawl at the end with the new babyface team. And new rising star standing tall. I thought it was really well booked.
Yep.
And as far as the Raw tag team division goes, as people say on wrestling Twitter, or at least in some circles of wrestling Twitter, WWE is afraid of All Elite Wrestling, and that's why they have good tag teams now. That's BS. But I don't think that that's. I think the Revival. Something went down with the Revival backstage. I don't know. And then I think Vince and whatever was just like, ah, fuck it. Just let them do what they want now.
The thing though with Ricochet and Black is they're going to have to piss or get off the pot with them because they can't be on both shows.
No.
Fight like kind of fighting for the tag title scene, which they really haven't on SmackDown. They've just been feuding with the bar, but they kind of, if they're going to be in the Raw tag title picture, they need to just be on Raw, I think, right now.
Sure.
You're kind of spreading them thin here.
That's fair, yeah, because they've had matches with everybody, which I think is the biggest criticism. You'd like to save some matchups for later. You know, I mean, you're plowing through all this stuff so quickly.
Exactly.
And Ricochet and Black are an excellent tag team already in my time.
For a makeshift tag team, yeah.
I mean, they are killing it together. Their tag match with the European Union, Fabian Aichner and Marcel Bartel, was really good on NXT last week in the Dusty Classic tournament. They're killing it. They're definitely a team to look forward to, and I think that they're obviously two guys that are getting a fairly significant push. I mean, they're winning most of their matches. They didn't win the night, but they didn't take the loss, and they stood tall at the end.
They lose. Yeah.
So, but like you said, they are plowing through a lot of these big matchups, and they probably ought to settle down a little bit and figure out where they want to put them. Because they're kind of blowing their wad a little bit with them in a lot of ways. But, I still think this was really good booking and a really good match.
Yes, absolutely. All right, U.S. Heavyweight Title 4-Way here. We got Samoa Joe defending against R-Truth, Andrade, and Rey Mysterio. And this was tremendous. This is really good stuff. And these guys, they've been doing a hell of a job on TV in these matches, in this series here. And it's fun seeing R-Truth. You know, in this type of series at 47 years old, you know, the timeless R-Truth here. I mean, he's been holding his own against these guys. He's not the super worker thing, but he's held his own. He's been great at being base. He's been great at being like the assistant for Ray type shit. I mean, he's done a lot of stuff, to hold his own in this series. And, yeah, this is really good. And Samoa Joe finally having a championship is a good thing. I think he's doing a great job as a champion. And he got a big win here. He got Ray in the Kikina clutch and put him down. So Ray's the one that did the favors for him. And, I really enjoyed this match. And I'm definitely interested to see where we go from here. I guess setting it up for Cena, I guess, we may finally get our Cena Samoa Joe singles match at Mania. So that, because Samoa Joe, I think, is going to do the open challenge. So Yeah, I think that's where we're going. So what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, this match was tremendous. Their match last week on TV was also awesome. And, yeah, they killed it again. R-Truth is 47 years old and moves around like, you know, anybody else can and is killing it right now. Give him credit for sure. Of course, Andrade is amazing. Rey Mysterio is my WWE Wrestler of the Year in the ring in 2019. And Andrade is probably too, to be honest.
Okay, here's a question then. I saw where some people were kind of upset that they didn't get the singles match. Where do you fall on that line?
I was a little bummed at first because their singles matches have been so incredible. But I, you know, was fine with the four-way, and the four-way was great. So I'm satisfied with what we got. And I think Rey and Andrade will, at minimum, have a singles match that'll get 20 or 25 minutes on TV within the next 4 weeks. I think we'll get that at minimum. At most, they'll get a singles match at Mania. I'm starting to really doubt that.
Too much, man. Mania's too crowded. Right,
exactly. That's just. I mean, that's why. But I kind of expect him to have a singles encounter in the next couple of weeks, and I think that they'll probably kill it again. But yeah. People who are listening, do me a favor. Watch clips of Rey Mysterio from 1996 and from 2019 and tell me the difference, because there is none.
I call it R-Truth timeless. Rey is just as timeless. And Rey, you know, God, Rey's had, you know, a lot of stuff happen in his career. I mean, he's had some injuries. He has had, you know, the major league serious injuries. But the guy is, you know, he's had that stem cell stuff, man, that treatment, and that's just kept him where he can work at this type of level, man, and it's just been wild. I mean, the guy is tremendous.
He's also off the roids right now.
That helps out as well. Yes, he's not carrying all that weight on his body, because Rey has that small frame, and you put that all that weight on there, man, and that can take a toll on you.
Yes. Yes, it can. But yeah, he's my top in-ring guy so far this year at WWE. But yeah, this match was excellent. Joe has been legitimately great in the ring the last couple of months. I really think the AJ title feud in the fall ignited him in the ring. And I think he's actually...
Well, he has a purpose now, too. Right. I mean, when Joe has a purpose, that makes him even better.
He's been an excellent promo for a couple of years now. Just a tremendous promo, really. One of the best in the world in the mic. Yeah. And really one of the better characters in the world. His in-ring has faltered a lot. You know, I mean, when you jump down a flight of stairs on a TNA pay-per-view against Sting, I mean, that's, you know, that's what happens. But he's really figured out a way to work with his, you know, his body limitations now, and he's excelled tremendously. And I think
Joe's a guy that's going to benefit. He's one of those guys going to benefit a lot from a lot of these new voices and creative, because he was a TNA guy.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. You know, he worked with Bruce and Jarrett for years. So yeah, he's a guy who's going to get a lot of shine, and he deserves it. He's an all-time great, really. Stoked to see what happens with him going into Mania, and I really hope the Cena rumor comes true, because I would love the hell out of that.
A lot of people would, for various reasons. So yeah, that would definitely be a match that would be a definite treat for Mania, no doubt. So, and we'll see where we go with Rey and Andrade. So, in truth, of course, it'll be around. Probably he'll be in the Andre or something like that. Sure. So he'll be around. That Andre may be the most stacked Andre it's ever been this year, with some of the people that could be in that.
Yep.
Too. That's another thing. All right. Next, we have the women's tag titles match. Bayley and Sasha defending against Nia Jax and Tamina. Beth Phoenix was at the commentary table for the match. Little did we know why that would be so important. it's tough sometimes with these two, with these teams, especially with Tamina in there, and if Nia's not in a working mood, and there were some moments here that, that weren't that good. Sasha and Bayley got the win, which was, you know, the obvious finish. But Nia and Tamina jumped them again after the match, so I was like, oh my God, here we go. And they're beating up on them, and then Nia threw Sasha over the announce table, and that pissed off Beth Phoenix. So Beth gets into Tamina's face, and then Nia jumped Beth from behind, and then they did a beatdown on Beth in the ring. So naturally, Natty comes running out to save Beth. Natty needs a new best friend now because Ronda's heel. So Natty needs that friend, and she comes down to save her former tag partner. And it's looking like we're going to have something here now. Beth's obviously going to wrestle if they're doing this physical angle. So there's going to be something in Mania. I don't know if it's going to be a multi-team match or what. But obviously Beth Phoenix is going to be involved in a match at WrestleMania. So who would have thought that? That wasn't something that was in the talks before tonight. So, yeah, what'd you think about that unexpected turn and the match itself in general?
The match was actually a good, fast-paced match. Nia and Tamina, specifically Tamina. Maybe Nia, too. Both need to learn how to base, for God's sake. I know Sasha's flings her body around wildly because it's Sasha, but God, catch her, for crying out loud.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Tamina actually had a decent performance until she had to, you know, base. She might be the worst base I've ever seen. and Nia is either good at it or terrible at it. She goes
and goes.
I know. She's bizarre when it comes to her in-ring. She's sometimes excellent, sometimes terrible. She wasn't terrible.
She has this thing. Like I said, if she's motivated, she's really, really
good.
Like
the Ronda matches, which are amazing.
Yeah, exactly. But if she's like in a mood or not into it, I mean, you don't know what you're going to get.
Right. I have to give Bayley credit. A lot of people have been praising her this year. She deserves it. She's been awesome this year in the ring. Really underrated.
Absolutely. Bayley's having a bounce back year.
She's been really, really good in the ring this year. She's confident. She's a lot more motivated. You can tell. She picked up the win here with Arana. Nia Jax, I know Bayley kicked out of it tonight and stuff, but Nia needs to use that freaking powerbomb as her finish, because good Lord, that looked amazing.
That was, yeah, it was Kevin Nashian right there. I mean, that was a great Jack Nye powerbomb that she used on Bayley.
That was an awesome spot. Sure. She needs to use that more often. Or as a finisher or something, because that was killer. The post-match was awesome. I like Beth Phoenix. I thought she was great in the Rumble last year. If you remember, she and Nia had a great spot in the Rumble 2018.
Yeah, that's right. She was in the Rumble, yes.
And I thought the angle was a nice surprise and really well done. Natalya had people screaming for her and actually cheering for her, which is like a first ever, outside of maybe Canada, because typically nobody gives a shit about Natty, but that worked really well. And the beatdown was great and whatnot. I'm going to tell you what I think we're going to get. We didn't mention it. Now I think it's worth mentioning it. The Iconics interrupted the pre-show and cut a promo about how Sasha and Bayley have claimed they were going to be on all three brands. They've been on Raw, of course, and they showed up to NXT last week on TV. They have not yet been on SmackDown. The Iconics brought that up, called them out for it. I think we're getting a four-way at Mania. Sasha Bayley, Iconics, Nia Tamina, and Beth and Natty pin up strong in a four-way for the tag titles.
The thing about Mania this year is, God, there's going to be so many fucking multi
matches. Oh, yes. There's going to be, I'd say about half of them are going to be, I think eight matches will be multi-man. I think the 16-match rumor is probably true, roughly. And I think we're going to get seven or eight feature matches that are not multi-man, really. Well, I mean, Charlotte, Becky, and Ronda will be multi-man or multi-woman. But, you know, I think, you know, probably only get maybe five or six matches that are not multi-person. It's annoying. It's something that I'm going to accept begrudgingly. And I just, at this point, you just kind of have to, you know, hope that the build's logical and that the matches are going to deliver. And a lot of times they do. And, you know, sometimes they don't. And, you know, well, you know, I guess it depends on the year. You know, sometimes none of them do, you know, in a year. And then other times, you know, things go well. So it just, you just kind of have to swallow it a little bit.
Well, the one thing is, I mean, the one thing is we're going to have two battle royals, which is going to take up, which 50 people is going to be involved, 30 men and 20 women.
You know,
so we'll have battle royals.
It's a problem the WWE has now where they've signed and hired so many people, even on the main roster. And they've made WrestleMania such a destination spot for the wrestlers in storyline,
yeah,
that they got to get everybody on the show. And you know, you can't have everybody on the show in singles matches. So
no way.
So the only way you do it, you just give them a bunch of multi-man matches and multi-women matches, which is a bummer. You know, I'm with you there, for sure. But it's something that you just, it's a hard pill to swallow in a lot of ways, but you just have to accept, I don't know. You just have to accept it. And it is a fair, legitimate criticism, and I don't, you know, begrudge anyone for being terribly annoyed with it. And I'm annoyed with it for sure. I know others are driven even more crazy by it, and I get it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens for sure. All right. Next, we get the WWE title match, which was announced as a triple threat match. But it was not Kofi Kingston. Kevin Owens came down first, and the announcer got confused that it was announced a triple threat. Bryan was out, and then comes Mustafa Ali, who was, interestingly enough, the guy that Kofi replaced when he had an injury on an Evolve show, and he had to miss some time, so Kofi replaced him, and that's where this, you know, miraculous Kofi angle came from. Was from that. I mean, really, Ali was the guy that was supposed to be in that position. So he's getting his shot. And the thing about this is, you know, Mustafa has had a really good run on SmackDown. He's been on enough where people know who he is. But he was in a bad spot here. These fans wanted Kofi Kingston in the worst way. And there were a few boos for Mustafa, but it was basically, you know, just a nonplus reaction for him. Owens got cheered, you know, by a good amount. Bryan was booed, but the fans were all about Kofi. And they were chanting, "We want Kofi. We want Kofi." And these guys were having a really good match, but the fans were just Kofi in a Kofi frenzy, which is amazing to think about. And this shows you they've got this thing over, man. They've told the stories and gotten Kofi over in that way where the fans wanted to see him. Well, credit to these guys. They busted their ass and worked hard, did a lot of crazy shit, especially Mustafa Ali, who is just a complete madman with some of the stuff he does, bumps and everything. And they got the crowd back into the match by the finish. Two things I want to mention with Mustafa Ali. One, he did this thing where Daniel Bryan drop-kicked him as he's on top rope, and he jumped and just launched himself into the barricade on the floor.
Lunatic.
Which just, it looked like it hurt like hell. And then Bryan was laying on the apron, and he hit the 450 off the top rope onto the apron, and that had it had the biggest stomp sound. There was no fucking give. And Bryan rolls in the ring. You can tell he's not feeling good at all. And Mustafa is just, I mean, he was in pain too. Just crazy, crazy stuff. And then he's going to do this wild dive from the top rope to the floor and lands on his feet. I mean, the guy will put it all out in the line to get himself in the match over. He would definitely do that. And the fans finally got into it. Rowan got involved heavily here. But not, you know, he wasn't involved in the finish, but the finish is awesome. Ali was going to do a tornado DDT. And then Bryant hit him with the knee, running knee in the air. Another in the air finish. Well, not finish per se, but this was the finish. And got the win. So Bryant goes over Ali. Owens is kept strong here. And now we're in a situation. What do we do? Owens didn't lose this match. He wasn't even involved in the finish. Kofi, of course. You still got to do that. I mean, there's no way around it. He's got to be involved. So, do we get now the three-way with Owens, Kofi, and Bryan on the pay-per-view now? Because I think that's where they're going. I think we're going to have another multi-man match. I don't think we're going to get Bryan versus Kofi in a singles match. I don't see them doing it that way. I just really don't. So, what do you think?
I definitely think that there's a three-way possibility. I don't think you're wrong. Because, as you said, Owens lost clean. I will say this, and I could be way off here. Didn't Rowan cost Owens the match? No, I don't think Owens and Rowan are going to have a match or anything. But didn't he cost him the...
Well, yeah, he took him to the barricade. So he was on the floor, right. Yes.
It's kind of
a... Well, here's a thought I had real quick. They won't do this because it would mean not having the title on the line. But if they wanted to bring... I mean, Luke Harper's back. He worked the house
show. This is kind of what I'm getting to, too, but go ahead.
If they wanted to do some multi-man deal where they got Brian Harper, Rowan, and Bray Wyatt...
Yes.
...against Kevin Owens in a New Day.
Right.
That's just something that I'm throwing out there as a possibility. I just don't know if they'll do that because they wouldn't have a title match. Mm-hmm. So unless they take the belt off Bryan before, you know, against somebody
else.
I could see.
Now, I don't think that they would do it because I think the better idea would be have Owens team with Biggie and Xavier and wrestle the other guys, the old Wyatts in a six-man. Who are now basically Brian's underlings, and have them a six man in the undercard.
I mean, they could do that, but
I don't think that would happen either.
I think they'd rather put them in the Rumble if they're gonna do that. Right. I mean, Battle Royal.
Yep.
I think everybody, the key players, all have to be in the same match.
Right. I think we're definitely getting a WWE. I mean, we're getting a WWE title match, and I think Brian and Kofi are definitely in it. But I do think Owens is a wild card, and I think there is a good chance he's in there too.
And Sami Zayn's hanging out there to win too.
Very true.
You know, so don't know.
This match was tremendous. I thought it was the match of the night, actually, in the ring.
It was really damn good.
I think.
Yes.
This is one of those matches where the fans were really upset that Kofi wasn't in. Ali actually got some heavy boos early. And general apathy at first, too, which I feel bad for him. But I think this was actually brilliant booking by WWE because they knew this would happen. I think it was this.
Well, they totally acknowledged
it,
too.
And the reason I knew it was on purpose is when the commentary kept talking about it for the entire match.
They hammered it.
That tells you right there it was not done on purpose, and I think that's great booking.
This is what they want.
They wanted it, and I didn't. I just thought of it just now on this podcast. I think they knew there would be irony of Ali was this guy who, you know, not everybody, but, on some circles on the internet who, oh, he's on 205 Live. You know, they need to move these guys up. He's finally moved up on the main roster. He gets his opportunity. He gets hurt. And I think the irony of Ali is, and they might even bring it up on TV, Vince or somebody might even bring it up, you know.
Kofi took his spot.
And you know, they said, well, Kofi took his spot. And then we gave Ali a spot, this guy that y'all cheered for to get on the main roster, and then you booed him? I think it was designed. You know, the irony is that Ali got booed. That there's also irony in that, too. And I think it was actually – I think that is – you know, all this is intentional. And, of course, the work was so damn good in the match that the crowd actually couldn't help but get into it towards the end.
They had no choice.
Which I think was the risk there because I think the WWE was thinking, man, Ali's a hell of an in-ring wrestler. We want them to boo the, boo the booking of the match at first, but you know, these guys are so good that the crowd will get into it. That is risky. That's risky because, you know, crowds will hijack a show and hijack a match. That didn't really happen here. You know, it happened a little bit early, but,
well, you know what people were going with? They were going with the Rey Mysterio in at number 30. Right. In the Royal Rumble, you know, the year with Brian, who it's funny that all this is happening with Daniel, yes, Bryan, which on is the opposite side.
This is really well done stuff. Yeah, this match was exceptional. That finish was incredibly violent. I mean, Bryan just threw himself at Ali. I mean, it was like a really ugly midair collision. Totally believable as a finish. Awesome stuff. Awesome match. The match of the night. Probably, arguably, the WWE match of the year in a lot of ways, actually. This was just a tremendous, tremendous match. And the booking, I think, is actually pretty risky. And I'll even play devil's advocate. And, you know, he got some good pops towards the end with his spots, and I think this, in a lot of ways, this might have actually hurt Ali, which is the risk, really, more than anything, because I think Owens and Bryan are bulletproof in terms of the fan reactions. Now, I mean, Bryan's getting booed, but Bryan's, an exceptional performer who is being booed based off his performance. But my point is, he and Owens are so over in their own way that, you know, the fans aren't really ever going to completely turn on those two guests. Ali could be in trouble. But I don't think so.
I think it was just
that's what I think too, because at the end of the day, Kofi's going to get his title shot at Mania, and you know, that's going to free up Ali. You know what I mean? In terms of the heat, whatever. It was a one night thing, and it was really well done. And this was an awesome match. I loved it.
It was really damn good. That's true. All right, so now we have the last two matches. Raw Women's Title, number one contender match, kind of sort of in a way. If Becky wins, she gets in the match at Mania. Charlotte was already in, so Charlotte had nothing to really wrestle for here other than to keep Becky out. So we have Becky and Charlotte here. Becky hobbling on the crutch. So, you know, I mean, this is not going to be the match for the work rate. It's going to be, a lot of angle stuff here. And it was. Charlotte definitely worked over Becky for the whole match, working over the leg. And Becky was doing whatever she could do to survive. And but Becky eventually made a comeback and got to disarm her on Charlotte. And Charlotte eventually got to the figure four leg lock. So now it's looking like, okay, now what's Becky, how's Becky going to get out of it? Out comes Ronda Rousey, our new heel, who is running to the ring, and she's dressed like her horsewomen counterparts her associates on NXT. Same type of look. So now she's fully ingratiated herself with them and jumps in the ring and hits Becky. As Becky was in the figure four to get Charlotte disqualified. Now, I saw a lot of people bitching about this finish. Was it a cheap finish? Yes. But here's the thing. This match didn't really need a clean finish. I know where people are saying that Becky should have come out on top, fought against the odds, and got
the
win.
She won the damn Royal Rumble on a bad knee.
Yeah, she got screwed out of her shot. So she's just... So, I mean... Would that have been one way to do it? Yeah, it would have been one way to do it. And it would have been fine if they went that way, but this way was just as good for different reasons because this tells the story. Ronda wants Becky in the match.
Yes.
Her issues with Becky.
And
so she wanted Becky in the match.
If this closes WrestleMania, do you want Charlotte Flair, one of the three competitors in the main event, in the first ever women's main event of WrestleMania, most likely, to lose clean 3 weeks before, 4 weeks before? No.
No.
God, no.
No. It had to be a screw finish. So, I mean, Charlotte's not going to lose two in a row. Well, Well, I don't think she's going to lose the Mania match anyway. I think Ronda's going to be the one losing, but still.
Right.
You have to set this up, and you have to tell the story. And the story is Rousey wants Becky in this match. So she's going to do what she can do to do this. And this type of finish I've been wrestling many times over the years in these type of deals, where somebody's controlling somebody else's destiny in that way, where they, either they want them involved or they don't want them involved. You know, it, this stuff has happened. So this was not that big of a deal. I understand where, you know, people would want Becky to come out on top. And a lot of people have really been turning their back on this angle, and I want to talk about that. There's been some interesting stuff done lately in this, and they've kind of the way Becky's been portrayed in a way now is a lot of people are complaining that she's too needy, I guess you would say. She's not being the badass that she was. And now they're doing things like this, and Ronda has to win her, you know, fight her battles for her in a way to get her in the match. I mean, there's all kinds of polarizing opinions on this whole deal, but the fans are into it. I mean, they want this to go down, and this was a way to get there, and this is the way they went, and it worked. Could they have done the other thing? Yes, they could have done it, but this is the way they did it, and it worked. So now we're going to see what happens before we send the road, because guys, listen, I mean, Fastlane, it's just a show. This is not a main show. This is all a setup show for WrestleMania. That's what its intent is.
There's an angle that
it's not intended to be a standalone show where we're supposed to have all these great matches and blah 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 blah. It's not its intent. If we get great matches, yes, it's a plus. But this is to push forward WrestleMania booking plans. That's the goal. We're in Mania season. We're on the road to WrestleMania. And that's exactly what this did. So, I don't know. I mean, it was just a total mixed reaction. And it was mixed reaction live. There were fans that didn't know what to think about this, because they were wanting Becky to come out on top in the Becky way. But Becky's supposed to be selling an injury. So, that's my soliloquy. What do you have to say on all this?
Yeah, I'll actually say the match was actually worked smartly, and I actually liked how it was very of a fight feel to it. The women have been great with that recently, where a lot of their matches feel like actual fights, more so than men's. But there were some spots and stuff that were just really nasty, like the spot where Charlotte like face washed and grinded Becky's fucking face by standing on it. Like that was just really nasty, and like things got, it felt like, you know, it felt real for a second. I was like, damn, like that felt like, you know, Becky kicked Charlotte too hard or something, and Charlotte got pissed. I mean, you know, they've done a really good job of implementing like the big fight, real fight feel into their matches. And I thought that had a good bit of it here. The Ronda, it's funny, I didn't even think of that solution to this match until my brother Dustin brought it up early. He was like, oh, I bet Ronda will come out and attack Becky, and Becky will be and Charlotte will be DQ'd. And I was like, you know what? That probably will happen. And of course it did, and it made sense. The story of this feud, dating back to October when they started the Build a Survivor Series, has always been based off the social media interactions and Ronda's outrages and outbreaks and tirades in the last week or so. All this has been, the story has been, Becky has gotten into Ronda's head over the course of the last several months. Becky wants to prove that she is the best and has always wanted to be the best and has had to fight to become the best. And then she finally did that. And then, you know, she wanted to prove it to Ronda, who calls herself the baddest woman on the planet, blah, 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 blah. Becky got into Ronda's head over the course of the last several months. Ronda, because of Becky getting into her head, couldn't stand it anymore and wants Becky in the match because she wants to show she's just all talk and that she's messing with the wrong person. And Charlotte is involved because of the meta side of the storyline, which, well, Becky and Ronda is also meta to a degree, really to a large degree. But Charlotte is there as the handpicked McMahon person. Surrogate. Yes, surrogate. There you go. And, you know, that's the storyline. And I think, you know, the interference tonight made a lot of sense. I'll go ahead and say this. I think it was interesting. It's not a negative, by the way. Although I think that there was some sloppiness in the women's tag title match and in Asuka and Mandy. That the women stuff was underwhelming is not the word to use because that's a negative term to use. It was not. Those matches weren't quite as stellar as the men's tonight, but they were just as or even more angle-driven in a lot of ways, particularly in the post-match and whatnot, or in the finishes. I just think that that's an interesting thing. The women were sort of kind of, you know, the work rate was sort of not the main focus for the women. I think that's really what it was that the women's matches.
Again, it's all about getting the mania, man. It's all about getting the mania.
And I actually think the men's matches focused a lot more on work rate tonight. I don't know if that was, you know, I don't know if.
Well, here's the thing. We only have two matches. We only have two matches announced for WrestleMania.
Right.
And one of those matches, one of those guys isn't around. Mm-hmm. Isn't around. And Brock. Yep. Brock. So Becky and Ronda and Charlotte is the main story.
Yes,
right,
it
now.
Is.
It is the big thing. So, and the reason why I didn't main event this show is because of the Shield situation.
Right. But I just thought it was an interesting thing. And like I said, it's not a negative. I don't think it's. I just thought that it's sort of kind of an interesting thing about the show was that the men sort of had the work rate matches. And the women matches weren't really work ready tonight. They were just
Ronda didn't work on the show.
That's
either,
fair.
You know?
Yep.
And we didn't get our standard Ronda match, which we, you know, me and you both love. And it's gonna be interesting to watch her work with a different style because she's gonna be the heel, so she's not gonna be doing babyface selling and comebacks. So she's gonna be working a different way. I'm definitely interested to see how she handles it.
Yes.
So. Yes, I mean, again, like I said, this was all about setting up the table,
right?
For the big deal.
To set up the table because we knew the Becky Charlotte match was going to be, you know, storyline driven tonight. We didn't have any clue really what was going to go on with the other women's stuff, so they really needed to just focus on the angles with them more than having great matches. I think it was a smart move because we didn't know who, you know, we don't know. We still really don't know who Asuka's opponent's going to be, but we got the Mandy Sonya stuff out of it. We got the women's tag division, tag title stuff a little bit more focused now. That
I'm thinking it's going to be Asuka Lacey, but I mean, and we'll talk about Lacey in a minute. I think that's where they're going to end up going.
Yeah, could be.
So, and let's go ahead and talk about it. All right, Elias came out and did the women's things again. And then a Lacey came out as he finished performing. Walked to the ring, and as she walked to the back, Elias was watching her leave. And all of a sudden, and only the way he can do it, Randall Keith Thornton came out and hit the RKO on Elias, and that place exploded. But as he got up and turned around, there's AJ Styles. And AJ Styles hit a phenomenal forearm on Orton. After saying he wasn't done with Orton yet. So, we get Styles and Orton on the show when they weren't originally scheduled booked. So, there's again, that's twice on the show that we've had that situation happen. So, I thought this was great stuff. I mean, it plays off the Elias thing, played off into the Lacey thing, which played off into this. So, I enjoyed this. And Orton doing the RKO stuff, I'd never get tired of it like that. So. What'd you think?
Yeah, this was great. This was a great segment. Lacey You know, they're doing the thing where they keep rolling her out, doing this thing where, you know, I guess it's a Lacey bomb, you would call it, where she comes out and does her walk and strut and down the ramp and back up.
It's going to end soon. Right. I mean, they're going to, as I was saying, I think they're going to do her an Oscar mania, and Oscar's going to, like, something's going to happen. She's going to just jump in the ring and attack Oscar or something. She's finally going to do something.
Right. I think you're right. Yeah, you know, they're doing some interesting stuff. You know, we've all heard they're high on her. That seems to be the case. She's talented. She has some.
She's great at playing her gimmick, that's for sure, which is very important on the main roster.
She's excellent at the gimmick. I'm not a huge fan of that gimmick, but she plays it to a T.
Well, that, you know, they we haven't seen it fully in the main roster. We just see her in the costume.
Right.
So we don't know if they're going to go the full NXT direction of that character.
Right.
Or they're just going to, you know, have it evolve.
The exaggerated Gone with the Wind Southern accent doesn't do it for me. That's my, I really think it's cringeworthy. But, like,
well, they're playing up the Southern Belle part. They are doing that.
I don't like. Yes. The accent was really what turned me off in the NXT stuff. I think she got better in the ring. She's a very good athlete. She has a lot of potential. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with her. As far as the Randy Orton stuff.
I don't. Do you think we'll get a singles match at Mania, or are they going to blow this off on television and they'll be involved in something
Orton
else?
AJ? Oh, yes. I think they're going to be in a singles match. It's Orton and AJ. If they want to have a singles match together, Vince will let them have a singles match together.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, why not?
I mean, I think it'll be a singles match. I think they'll kill it. You know, I'm excited to see it. That's not a feud that they've done with AJ yet. They had a TV match a couple years ago during the build to AJ Shane, but otherwise they haven't really interacted much. Randy got a couple RKO victories on him past month, dissed him on TV in the interview segments a few times, and we got tonight. So I think that's going to be the kind of reminds me of like when Randy, you know, kind of like that Randy Orton CM Punk feud or the AJ Jericho feud, like an upper mid card, lower main event singles match that's going to happen.
Yeah. So we'll definitely see where the TV falls on that one. All right, main event. The last call for the Shield. Well, at least as of now. As Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose went up against Drew McIntyre, Baron Corbin, and Bobby Lashley, who have been running wild on Raw in recent weeks. Roman Reigns, of course, first match back in the ring since his announcement of having leukemia and having to vacate the Universal title. So he was in here and didn't do a whole lot of work. I mean, was involved, but definitely it was a Rollins-Ambrose match as far as carrying the load as workers, which makes sense. Roman's got to get back in the groove. But he looked great in what he did, though. You got to give him that. That guy's, you know, been through what he's been through, and he basically went out there and looked like he hadn't missed a day. I mean, maybe his cardio maybe wasn't as good as it, you know, needs to be, but that's understandable considering what's been going on with him. But, I mean, he looked great. So it's great to see him back. He was missed severely when it comes to wrestling matches, for sure. We definitely need him back around. And the fans were into this heavily, which it is funny how, you know, we just had a big Shield reunion last year. And, of course, they did a little deal when Ambrose and Rollins broke up. And they had their failed singles match, a singles feud. And they just went and turned Ambrose this wacky character again. Not like the wacky character before. But, you know, I mean, then Shield hooked back up again. But the thing is on this that was the most interesting part of this, pretty much the most interesting thing in this whole show to me, was how hard they hammered home that Dean Ambrose was not renewing his contract. I don't remember them ever really doing this like this on the air, where they were openly just talking about this guy's leaving the company. He's not renewing his contract. We don't know what his future holds. Very weird. Very weird there, especially with the guy's wife's announcing. So, I don't know about that. And I've seen some people say that doing that's going to get people thinking this is all a damn angle. So, which could be the reason why they're doing it. They could be trying to make people think this is, you know, he's not really leaving. It's just an angle. But anyway, we don't know. We don't know if this was his last match or what he's going to do. It's just very vague about that. But anyway, the Shield got back together again. They hit their big spots. The crowd went ape shit. Corbin, of course, got finished off in the ring. McIntyre got powerbombed to the table. Crazy. They hugged it out after the match. Show went off with them doing their fist salute. Crowd was eating it all up. So, what did you think about this? Was it a worthy last call for the Shield?
Yes, I thought this was a great match and a tremendous main event. Yeah, this was basically the Shield's greatest hits match. They had the chaotic, all six guys brawling and doing crazy spots a couple of times mid-match. And, of course, at the end where they did the crowd brawling and Rollins did the crazy dive from the railing.
Oh, God.
And yeah, Ambrose did his running table spot. These are kind of callback spots from, like, all the famous Shield matches, like the Evolution feud and the Wyatt's program. It was really, really well done. Roman looked good when he was in there. Didn't look like he missed a beat, really. He did get his foot up on Corbin when Corbin was going underneath doing his around the post spot. That was a beast on Roman. But that happens.
You know, a little rust. Yeah.
Didn't feel too good for Corbin.
Corbin has some moments in this where he did love the he was having a great time.
Yeah, for sure. This was a great match. I also thought it was good that Lashley didn't take the fall or get to put through the table. He's got the title match tomorrow. So I thought that was good booking. Too bad for McIntyre. They were really on him and were pushing him hard.
Very interesting to see what goes on with him, because there's a lot of stuff going. I mean, there's a lot of people that are, again, have no plans for Mania right now at the moment that was in the public. So, yeah, I mean, exactly. He's somebody that, you know, was going to be up there. And, you know, we really don't know what the Fastlane original plans were. You know, what was going to happen originally here? If Roman wasn't able to come back this quickly,
right?
You know? Where were we going to go? Because we've been, before Roman came back, we've been running the same shit. Like we talked about last show, the Seth, Drew, Balor, Braun, Corbin, the same group of guys going against each other, and
tiresome.
It's kind of got tiresome because it's every week on television. So, we've been in bad need of a shakeup, and it's coming, thank God. But we're in bad need of a shakeup, and we'll see what happens. But Seth's got his run to WrestleMania, ready to roll with Brock. But none of the other guys in this match have anything set up, and who knows what Ambrose is going to be doing. So the question is, what do we do with Roman? I was talking to a guy at work today who is a huge WWE fan, but he's one of those guys where he kind of reads stuff on the internet, but he doesn't. And he kind of, in ways, believes it's real, too, in a way, too. He's one of those type of guys. He gets really into it. And he firmly believes Roman's going to be involved in he's going to be involved with Seth and Brock, going to make it a three-way. So I don't see that happening.
No.
They're playing that too much. So where do you think we're going to go with Roman and all these other guys?
A lot of people think Roman and Ambrose are going to have a match. I could see that they'd have to do something to make that a thing.
The way they could do it is Dean's like, listen, it's my last match I want to have with you.
Right.
You know, in the company, do it that type of way where there's no real turn, you know, just do it. Let's do this. We're brothers. Let me have I want my last match to be with you. And that'd be a perfect way to go about it.
I agree.
Everything doesn't have to have an angle, you know, sometimes.
No, it doesn't. You're exactly right.
But God, I mean, with the other guys and Braun, of course, it wasn't even on the show. I mean, it's like, what do we do? Mm-hmm. You know, Balor, of course, not on the show as well. I see champion, which of course he's gonna I guess finish his deal up with Lashley on Raw. So there's a lot of unanswered questions, isn't there, right now?
There is.
Definitely is. But it's a great send off for tonight with the Shield celebrating the ring and the fans going crazy and great way to end a great show. So I think it's pretty obvious. Thumbs up, thumbs down. I know you're going thumbs up.
Oh, yeah, thumbs up. This is the best non-Big Four WWE show in years. I think it's the best WWE main roster show in years. I mean, if you want to count Evolution as one, that had all that everybody on. And Evolution was probably just as good or better. But, you know, I thought this was, in terms of involving both the men and the women, this was the best main roster show in probably 3 or 4 years. It really felt that way to me. I thought there were some absolutely tremendous matches, 3 or 4 of them. Booking was great. Tons of angles that were exciting, and that it moved really well towards WrestleMania. And we got a big week of TV coming up. Tomorrow's Raw and Tuesday's SmackDown are going to be huge. That's always the case.
Oh, absolutely, because now there's nothing left. Yeah. It's all about going to Mania now. And, of course, Batista will be on Raw. So we'll see what happens with Batista and Triple H to further that whole deal. This is an obvious thumbs up. I mean, tremendous show. For the totality of it, there was no real bad match at all. Everything was at least decent to good. And then all the angles made up for the stuff that may not have been as good as it could have been, because it all advanced to the stories of where we're going. And that's a huge part of a show to me, especially like this show, where you need to have that type of stuff to build up WrestleMania. And if you run a show like this where it's completely cold and there's not really nothing coming out of it, you know, it's like, why'd you even do this? You just wasted basically a block of time here just to have good wrestling matches, but no story, no angle advancement. So they went above and beyond in that regard, and everything had a purpose, and everything felt like we're going to the next step. So yeah, this was a really strong show for sure. So I highly recommend that for those of you who haven't watched it. All right. That's it for us. We'll hopefully be back for WrestleMania. We'll definitely try to. I mean, we'll definitely do a reaction show.
Well,
God knows.
I have that Monday off of work. I have all of WrestleMania weekend off. So.
Well, there you go. Because God knows when that show is going to end.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long night. So we'll see what happens there. So we'll be back in 4 weeks for WrestleMania. So check us out then. All right, Devin, thanks as always for being on the show. And this is Chris saying so long from the Peach State of Georgia.